Good afternoon. My name is Tracy Renner, number 27242, and I'm here representing Kenny Chase, the appellant. I intend to focus my time on the speedy trial issue, but if the court has other questions about the other issues in the briefs, I'm happy to answer them. Mr. Chase had a right to choose to have his right to speedy trial over a last-minute fishing expedition into the alleged victim's social services records. What the trial court decided here is that it needed to delay Mr. Chase's trial past the speedy trial deadline in order to ensure his right to effective assistance of counsel. But what Ms. Whitney had told the court all along is, I can be prepared. I would, however, like to look at, and would like the court to look at in camera, these social services records in order to be most effective. And we allow defendants to make these types of choices and waive certain rights all the time. If a defendant is properly advised, they can waive their right to counsel, they can waive their right to confrontation, their right to jury trial. In the Savalos-Acosta case, this court found that the defendant was permitted to choose to not have a mistrial and go forward with a counsel who had a conflict. And it's really important to look at what is said during the hearing on February 19th. Ms. Whitney said, I don't know what's in those records. I don't know I would necessarily be ineffective. I would be most effective if the court would review that information, if I had that information, although we don't know what that information is. The court said, you don't know what's in them. This is, in essence, a court-sanctioned fishing expedition. I admit that. The DA said, when Ms. Whitney said she could be prepared, Mr. Chase historically has said he wants to go forward and he's not interested in pursuing this additional investigation. I think that Mr. Chase should be given his right to speedy trial. I think we should go forward to trial on Monday. The parties talk a lot about what effective assistance of counsel is under the law, and what effective assistance of counsel is under the law is reasonably professional, competent assistance.
Help me understand the distinction here.
Yes.
Are you saying that the trial court erred in ruling that there was an ineffective assistance issue here which would trump his right to speedy? Or are you saying that even if there was an ineffective assistance problem, he nevertheless had the right to assert his speedy trial over ineffective assistance, just as he had the right, would have the right to abandon his attorney entirely and go pro se? I mean, I think it has to be one or the other. So which is?
Looking at what the trial court decided is, I have to delay your trial so that you get effective assistance of counsel. That was wrong. There was no reason that Ms. Whitney could not be effective going forward to trial without this information, that no one knew what it was. She never had represented to the court that she could not be prepared or that she needed, you know, additional time to be prepared to represent Mr. Chase. In fact, when she first came onto the case, she said, Judge, I don't have very many cases. I absolutely can be prepared to go forward on this case, but I think this is something that needs to be done. So yes, I do believe that the trial court was wrong in finding that there was an effective assistance of counsel issue here.
At a discretionary ruling?
Well, in terms of speedy trial,
no, I mean, in terms of the trial court making a decision that there was an effective assistance problem here, do we review that for abuse of discretion, or do we review it some other way?
Well, my position is that it was not necessary to protect Mr. Chase's right to effective assistance of counsel by delaying his trial in this case. But if this court were to view it through the lens of, was this a request for a continuance? Okay, that's a different question under the statute. That's not the way the trial court decided it. But if this court were to view this as a request for a continuance, that is subject to the discretion of the court. A lawyer may request a continuance over the objection of their counsel, over the objection of their client, but it's subject to the discretion of the court. And the question is here, was it reasonable for the court to allow delay of Mr. Chase's trial when he's saying, I want my speedy trial. I don't care about doing further investigation. I am aware what you're telling me, that this is something that potentially could be useful in my case, but I want my speedy trial. So was it reasonable? So that's the court's decision to grant a continuance is subject to discretionary review. And so the question is, was this a reasonable decision of the trial court? And this is not a case like Guess or Abdu or Brewster, where the client is asking for a new lawyer or has filed additional motions, or is the defendant in some way is saying that they need something, or the lawyer is saying, I'm not prepared because the transcripts are not available of these witness statements. This is not a case like Duncan, where several days before trial, the defense was presented with new information, new discovery about a snitch witness that they had in their hands, and they could see what it was. And there was something concrete to say, we can't be prepared. We will be ineffective going forward on this. We don't want our client's speedy trial rights to be waived, but we will be ineffective because we know what this information is, and it requires us to do more preparation. We can't be effective in cross-examining until we've had enough time to look at this material.
The distinction that you're positing is that on the one hand, they know what it is that they have and they need a continuance to bring it right to bear. And in this case, they know generally the kind of thing they're seeking, but they don't really know whether it's in there.
Correct. And that's when you look at what the court knew in considering this request for additional investigation, the court knew that two prior counsel did not make this request. Having had the same discovery, this request was made not based on anything new. It was based on a statement by the alleged victim in this case that because of her prior history, this would be hard for her. At best, that suggests that perhaps she had previously been sexually abused, something that would not have been admissible under the rape shield statute.
That suggests it was an unreasonable request.
Under the circumstances presented here, it may not have been an unreasonable request by counsel, but for the court to have granted it under the circumstances presented here, where client is saying, I don't want this further speculative investigation, that's unreasonable. Under JAL and ADT, I understand that is supposed to be a liberal, the court's supposed to look at that liberally and decide whether or not to review records in camera. And in fact, there's a statement, I believe in ADT, saying it could be a violation of due process, but it still comes back to Mr. Chase had a right to waive that. He had a right to say, I want to waive any further investigation and looking into these records, and I want my speedy trial.
Can you give us any case in which a defendant's demand for speedy has collided with the lawyer's representations on ineffective assistance, and as a matter of law, the court has said that the client rather than the lawyer gets to make that call?
Well, I think I didn't come across a case that's precisely like this one. But I guess what I have said previously is we allow criminal defendants to waive rights all the time if properly advised. Mr. Chase had the right, and it is not, in my mind, a question of effective assistance of counsel, although he had the right to waive, if that's what this court finds, that it would have been ineffective to proceed without in-camera review of these records, Mr. Chase had a right to be, if properly advised, to waive that and have his right to speedy trial. But I don't believe that this is a case of being, that failure to pursue this speculative investigation amounted to ineffective assistance of counsel. When counsel was saying, I have adequate time to prepare, I would like to look at this, I would be most effective. And in fact, trial court in talking to Mr. Chase said, I understand your lawyer wants to mount the best possible defense. And that's not what effective assistance of counsel requires under the Constitution.
I'm concerned here that we might be in some ways conflating counsel's statements at the two hearings. In January, where she first appears as substitute counsel, she makes this request.
Correct.
And she makes the statements to the effect that, you know, but for this request, I can be ready to go.
And that doesn't change on February 19th. She's still saying, I'm ineffective as a matter of law because I would be more effective if I had the opportunity to look at these records.
Doesn't the court actually take pains to point out, are you talking about just more effective or are you talking about constitutional effectiveness? And doesn't she represent that she would not be constitutionally effective?
But there's nothing in the record that would support her saying anything more that I would be more effective. There's nothing in the record to support that she couldn't be adequately prepared. What she was saying is, and again, it's a legal determination for the trial court to make, not for defense counsel to say, I'll be ineffective in not, when there's nothing there. Again, it's not like the Duncan case where defense counsel is saying, I have looked at these materials. I know precisely what's there, and I need more time to prepare. I have something concrete. She was talking about something that she would like to look at. But other than that, there's nothing in the record that supports she couldn't have been effective in representing Mr. Chase. And if I may, I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
May it please the court and counsel, Paul Kaler, 192-10 for the people in this case. I think, first of all, this is an issue where the decision is reserved for counsel, and I think it was an obvious avenue of to search for impeachment evidence. Remember, this is a sexual assault on a child case. She was a runaway from a children's home, which suggests she had a troubled background and that she was breaking the rules. I think counsel would have been deficient and would have exposed herself to a charge of ineffectiveness had she not sought the trial court's review of this evidence. And in fact, the trial court reviewed this evidence, found discoverable information, provided it to defense counsel, and defense counsel used it in an attempt to impeach the complaining witness's testimony in this case. I think it's a clear case where counsel had more than reasonable grounds for seeking this impeachment evidence. The trial court needed the time in order to A, get the evidence in its possession, and B, review it, and then C, provide it to defense counsel. In this particular situation, the counsel's call on this issue trumps that of the defendant as far as speedy trial.
Cite for that last proposition. That the defendant simply cannot waive this away. If indeed the defendant can waive the right to conflict-free representation under the circumstances, why is it necessarily so that counsel's call trumps?
I think there's a side in our brief, Your Honor. I didn't write it down in my notes. If you want me to, I can grab it and try and dig through. But
something other than scales.
I can't remember what we cited.
Thank you.
Delays needed to protect the defendant's constitutional right to effective assistance of counsel are chargeable to him. This is not a case where counsel was busy or somebody else could have substituted in. Any reasonably effective counsel in this particular situation had good grounds to seek trial court review of this otherwise privileged information. And
let me ask a comparable question to what I asked of your colleague, your opponent there. Are you saying though that once counsel says, I will be ineffective, and assuming that she more or less said that, are you saying that ends the inquiry, or are you saying that the trial court nevertheless makes a ruling based on all the circumstances, including but not limited to counsel's representation, and then we review that ruling for what? Abuse of discretion or something else?
Right. I think it's the trial court's call. And the trial court has to make the determination of whether this is the truthful reason for needing the continuance or it's some sort of pretext for delay on some other impermissible ground.
And we would review that then for abuse of discretion.
Yes, an unusual abuse of discretion standard is manifestly arbitrary, unreasonable, or unfair, or apply the wrong legal standard. I think the trial court here was applying the correct legal standard.
Now, you're talking about continuance or speedy trial?
Continuance, Your Honor. And then, as well,
I mean, the defendant,
it's tied together, of course.
So, in your idea, this is going to be the call of counsel almost always.
If counsel's being truthful, and if it's saying,
well,
and if it's not an unreasonable, if it's not an unreasonable request, and here in this particular type of case, I would think in any sexual assault case, impeachment evidence concerning the complaining witness would be not seeking impeachment evidence that was reasonably available concerning the complaining witness would be a problem for counsel's effectiveness in this particular case concerning...
But could be.
Right, concerning a runaway from a children's home, I would say that it's even more obvious, more necessary, because it would seem to most people that a person in the complaining witness's situation... there would be things in her background that could be used to impeach her. And in fact,
this is like the old captain of the ship idea where counsel has to make these calls.
Yeah, I'm trying to avoid captain of the ship, but yeah,
understand.
It's a call that's reserved to counsel in this particular case where counsel had a good faith, reasonable basis for making this call. And the trial court found that it was, or at least by implication, if not directly, that counsel had a good faith basis for seeking.
This goes to the way the defense will play out at trial.
Yeah,
which
it's another thing I don't like saying. It's a he said, she said, mostly kind of case. The impeachment evidence concerns the complaining witness. And by not trying to impeach a complaining witness in this case, it would open up the judgment to attack for ineffective assistance of counsel grounds, and also defense attorneys themselves suffer repercussions by being found to have been ineffective for not doing things that they should be doing in their client's behalf. I have nothing further. If the court has any concerns concerning any of the other issues, I can try and talk about those a little bit. Thank you very much, Your Honors.
Okay, in terms of whether it was a reasonable decision on part of counsel to ask for these records, certainly. The question, though, is whether it was reasonable for the court under these peculiar circumstances to delay Mr. Chase's trial past a speedy trial deadline when he was jumping up and down saying, that's what I want. I'm not
Ms. Renner, let me follow up with the question I was asking Mr. Kidder. Sure. Is this an issue that should be reserved for counsel? It's that old notion, right?
The road.
Well, I understand.
But even Bergerud talks about professional reasonableness. And again,
to question the reasonableness after the fact. I mean, it seems to me the judge should rely on defense counsel's statements.
Well, the court has to look at the totality of the circumstances, not just counsel's representation that I would like to have this information because there might maybe perhaps speculatively be something.
Let's say there was something that was like a smoking gun, like, wow, this is really
powerful.
There's
no to support that in this case.
I understand,
right.
But let's say that would happen. Again, that would seem to go as a matter of law preference that it should be defense counsel making that call.
Or in other words, when the court's making the call, how does the court know when the court makes the decision? At the time the court says, okay, we're going to do this and we're going to bring these records in, how is the court supposed to know what's in there?
The court doesn't know. Counsel doesn't know. The prosecutor in this case said, I'm not going to object. And the defense counsel tries to intimate that, that perhaps the prosecutor had alluded that there was something exculpatory in there. But no one knows what's in these records. And Mr. Chase is saying, I want to go forward with the evidence that's there. I realize there could be something there that might help me, but I don't want...
But that's a defense call, and it seems to me that's a defense attorney decision.
Well, it's a defense attorney decision, again, to ask the court for that. But it's also the court's obligation then to say, all right, Mr. Chase, your lawyer is saying this. Your lawyer is saying that this would be a good path for you to take. Same as, you know, it would be best for you to have counsel and not proceed pro se. You're making this choice on the other hand. Do you fully understand, are you knowing and voluntarily and intelligently waiving your right to have this additional investigation?
He's not waiving the right to counsel.
Correct. He's waiving the right to some further speculative investigation. There was nothing in the record to support that this did, at the time the court was making the decision, that this did contain something that would be of highly exculpatory value to Mr. Chase. It would be different, perhaps, if the prosecutor had said something along those lines, but they did not. And we would ask that the court reverse for dismissal of Mr. Chase's case and on the other issues as set forth in the briefs. Thank you.
Appreciate the arguments of both counsel. The case stands submitted. Counsel are excused. A written opinion will be issued in due course. We're going